tuned up and rolling. It's the Rosie on the House Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford.
Okay, and the ambulance didn't arrive because nobody called 911, so you lost him.
Okay, he's dead. Anyone know what we do next?
We bury him.
Wrong. Check for an organ donor card. If he has one, we only have minutes to harvest.
Was that a little insight to what a typical training class is like?
That's perfect. That was perfect. That was awesome.
Joined by Scott Garzuzzi, the director of RIM Training, and Dan Green, CEO. RIM is for Reactive
Imminent
Medical Training.
Yep.
We were talking through blunt objects, trauma, falling off ladders. We've got a couple other things. When you impalements are something that will bring a homeowner into that. What do you do if you walk across a situation like that? Do you leave the object in? Do you try and pull it out? You know, you remember when Robert Duvall had that arrow stuck in his leg and he had his friend push it all the way through, cut it off, and rip it back out? Or should have you left it in there to keep the blood from creating a bleeding situation?
Should have left it in there, that's for sure. The impalements, definitely first thing you want to do, call 911, get the ambulance started. Once you get over that shock factor, you really need to leave it in. So there is a good story. Everybody remembers good old Steve Irwin when he got stung by the stingray and the bulb got stuck. He actually died because they removed the bulb and he bled out on the boat. They're not saying he would have survived it anyways, but he would have had a better chance of survival had they left it in. So an impalement, we just leave it in. Screwdriver, doesn't matter what it is.
On a bleeding artery, how long do you have to cut that off before, you know, your loss of blood is too much to sustain life?
So we base everything on volume in the medical side. So it depends on the volume that you lose. If your heart rate is going up and you're beating at 180 times a minute, you're going to bleed a lot faster. So the first step is to calm people down, and you might be able to buy yourself an extra minute or two, but you can bleed out from an artery in 3 minutes or less.
Mm. All right. So, and then the last one, it's a very hard topic to bring up, but y'all have seen it, and it is a reality of the world, but walking in on a suicide injury.
Yeah, and that is kind of a difficult subject to talk about, but it's, like you said, it's a reality. Usually what happens under the, you know, studies and over we find is that once the act of attempting the suicide happens, there's a lot of, oh no, what did I just do? You know, I can't believe this is happening. I didn't want to do this. And at that moment, your life is in peril. And maybe, you know, hopefully, maybe a friend, a loved one, or even yourself can now reverse that decision and buy you time. And hopefully with the trauma intervention, hey, you're able to call 911, save your life, and now that decision, that horrible decision that was made can now be fixed and corrected. So that way you live through the day.
And this is a hard subject to really learn and become an expert at on the radio. These training classes are done in person, on site, in facilities. But let's talk me through building a first aid kit. Where we live, the closest hospital, driving at a controlled rate, not the speed limit, but the controlled rate, you're 25 minutes before you get to hospital. I've got a big Cintas chest that's just full of gauze, and I mean it is absolutely loaded just because I can't get anywhere in a fast time, and nobody can get to us in a fast period of time.
So it's come a long way, especially now with the medical helicopters and everything that's flying, so our times have decreased a little bit, but you still need to buy some of that time. It all starts with looking at the injury patterns and also looking at the stats on what's going to kill you the fastest. So we look at certain things when we build out our medical kits. They're very costly when they get up there if you're using the right equipment. So we teach you different ways to make smaller ones. Tourniquets is always going to be number one. A tourniquet is the number one killer, and that's preventable.
Now, where do I go buy a tourniquet? I mean, is this something you can pick up at your grocery store? Where am I going to find a tourniquet?
So nowadays, it's basically going to be online. Have to be careful. There's always counterfeits that are out there and people making cheap knockoffs that don't work. So make sure it's an approved vendor when you go through and order some of these. There's a lot of good medical suppliers. Find out from your police departments and your fire departments on who they use. They're usually using the approved vendors for sure.
And what should a good tourniquet cost me?
Roughly $35. So it's relatively cheap when you think about it in terms of a life.
And how many tourniquets do you have at your house right now? I mean, you're probably an exception because your medical vehicle is probably equipped pretty heavily.
I have quite a few tourniquets laying around. Every vehicle has two actual tourniquets themselves, and then I also have a bunch that I can make out of those. Every vehicle has that. My motorcycle even has one in it. So I always have something with me that I can make one out of.
So my wife, she's really big into crafting, and she's got all the bandsaws and the blades and everything. So we have four tourniquets stationed right there, full trauma kit, in the garage, ready to go, because a lot of times I'm not home and she's doing all her work, and if she, you know, whoops, you know, cuts off a finger or something like that, she can apply these tourniquets, and they're readily available.
And when you say approved medical supplier, I mean, give me some brand names here to look for. Where do you go shop online?
So I shop through basically North American Rescue is the one that I use. They supply most of the first responders in the nation, and that's going to be number one. I would not buy anything off of Amazon because you never know where it's actually coming from. So they could sell something that sounds like a tourniquet, and it might only cost $11, but through North American Rescue, it's $32.99. It's a fair price to go ahead and pay and have available for you.
So past the tourniquet, what's the next piece of equipment I'm looking at in my first aid trauma bag?
The next killer you're looking at really is an airway. So that's more of a technique and walking you through the motions and getting comfortable with how to actually control somebody's airway. And then we can move into other things like your respirations, how you're breathing. They make a couple different things that work for sealing holes in chests and something that'll eventually kill you. It's a surgical fix no matter what, but it's something to prevent you from dying right then and there. So we're looking at things like that. And then we get into some of our bandaging supplies and some of the rest of those types of things.
How many feet of medical tape?
Don't really need medical tape. You got duct tape.
Duct tape, okay.
Duct tape works just fine.
So some of the other things, too, is with the bandages, there's also a couple products out there that are called Quick Clot or Celox. And what those are is they're the hemostatic agent. And essentially, in layman's terms, they just help coagulate the blood so that it doesn't – it's like the natural clotting artery or clotting factor. So it slows or stops the bleeding. And those usually help, but those can get kind of – you know, there's a little pricey because you're looking – what, $45?
About $45 a package. Sometimes you can get two packages stuffed into a wound to prevent bleeding or stop the bleed. So there's all sorts of different things that are on the market. It's just a matter of what is cost-effective to you.
Exactly.
And you walk into a Cabela's, you walk into Bass Pro Shop or REI, any kind of hiking outdoors place, they have different size first aid safety kits. Is that good enough to start with, or are we looking...
We're looking at a little different as far as that goes. A lot of that's just your Band-Aid fixes, those types of things, the things that you, a minor injury that you might have. This is more of I'm going to try to stop the bleeding, control the airway, control your breathing just a little bit, and prevent you from dying. This would be the immediate I'm going to die within 5 to 10 minutes if we don't intervene now.
And how much do you have invested total? I mean, the experts probably have more than the average person is going to. I don't know that anyone's going to go get four tourniquets, Dan.
When I ultimately look at some of the kits, the kit that I carry in my car or my motorcycle, I probably have about $150 invested.
Okay.
And with that amount of money, and I always equivalate it back to if I'm driving on the freeway and I witness an accident, I have enough stuff in there that I could probably treat 4 to 6 patients if I had to before the medical services actually showed up. So...
I should have had you bring that up. Or did you drive your motorcycle or your car?
I drove my car. It's actually clipped on the back of the headrest. My wife knows where it is. My kids know where it is. So everybody in my family knows where it is if I actually need it.
Maybe next break I'll have you run down and grab it. That'd be fun to put it out and take a picture of it and put it on our archive page, because this broadcast will be available at rosieonthehouse.com. If you just click on the radio and today's date, what is today? November 17th. This is the 7 o'clock hour. You'll have that entire podcast, and there'll be links. We'll put that Northern American Rescue link on there. We'll put a link to RIM Training's website if somebody's interested in organizing a training, whether it's a community, like you said, a Boy Scout troop, a Girl Scout troop, corporate office. You had also mentioned earlier something else on active shooter, and we had that situation in
Thousand Oaks,
which is what you said, 10 miles from where you grew up.
Yep, it is.
And it's just unfortunate that we live in a day and age where, you know, we have to be looking over our shoulder, be prepared at how we're going to react or how we're going to respond to these type things.
if you found yourself in that situation, what
just to keep it simple on the radio, you know, and to convey to the listeners, it's just the simple human response. You're either going to run, you're going to hide, or you're going to fight. I mean, that's just it. The natural human reaction in the most ideal type situation is if you can run and get out of the situation, absolutely do that. But let's say you're a mother with a bunch of children, you know, where are you going to run to? Maybe you can't carry all the kids with you, or maybe you have some type of ailment. Maybe you can just hide the best you can. I mean, we know we kind of joke and say, let's not hide behind a glass window. Let's, even if all you have is a little pony wall or a desk or something, hide behind that. Do the best that you can. But then ultimately, if you can't run or hide, you're just going to have to face and fight this attacker or fight this problem. And that might be your last resort. But if you do, you know, you just have to stay committed and stay committed to your survival and your very existence. And hopefully you get through the day and get back to your loved ones.
And nobody knows until you're in that situation which one you're going to do. You mentioned run, hide, or fight. Walking through the run, how far do you run?
Run as far as you can. You get away from the situation. You know, and we also talk about, too, is who you're running with, you know, the decisions you're going to make. Do you have a battle buddy or a friend that you're accountable for? Because maybe you leave the situation and I say, well, if I'm with Scott and I get out, you know, well, where's Scott at? Where's he at? How are we accountable to each other and so forth? So maybe I can notify first responders, hey, Scott's not here with me. How do I get in touch with him?
And then in your hide, I mean, how long do you sit there? Do you wait till somebody in blue shows up and says, okay, you can come out now?
Absolutely. You hide until, yes, somebody of authority or someone in blue is like, hey, you are safe. You can now come with us. And you just follow their direction. Something just that simple.
And looking at you, I made an assumption. You probably are both caring. And you're probably guys that would likely fight.
Well, we kind of say this, use this example. Yes, with me being caring and all my experience, tactical training experience, I say this. We use the example of being like in a grocery store, right? Let's say I'm at the back of the grocery store and this incident's going down in the front. I'm not going to go running through the grocery store to deal with this problem. I'm going to get my family and whoever's around me out. We're going to run. If I can't run, I'm going to hide with the people around me and kind of do the best I can to protect them. If the only reason I'm going to fight is if I'm at the front of this grocery store when this is
option
going
A and down. Option B aren't viable. This is the last resort.
This is the last resort. Yes, we're not looking for hero. I don't have all my gear and all my awesome, you know, radios and resources, and it's just a matter of me and this individual. So yes, that would be the last thing that we would do.
Well, putting this together, Gary and I were trying to decide what could we do, because you never know what you will do for that situation. We thought, well, we want to see just how good our guests are. So I've got a special guest lined up that I want to introduce. Is he ready, Gary? Hey.
All right.
He's ready.
All right. Mm-hmm. Come on in. Tony, come here.
Say hello to my little friend.
Well, that special guest is got a lot of firepower there.